Strange thing about Parkinson's actually is that we can't walk very well, increasingly can't walk, but we can run and walk backwards. I can shimmy backwards absolutely normally. How weird is that? It's weird, isn't it? The way the brain works. So we lose our autonomic functions. But so if you see me acting strange 1 minute but normal the next, that's the nature of the disease. I'm not faking it. Quick story. I do a lot of work in with government back in the UK. I also lead a Parkinson's charity. And I was invited to Prime Minister's Questions, which is quite a privilege, and to sit in the chamber at the House of Commons. But in Parkinson's, and I just want to explain this because we're together all weekend. It's easier for me just to get this out there. We're either on or we're off. When I'm on, it means the medication's working. When I'm off, I'm actually quite a shambles and, you know, you'll really notice it. And that's very medication dependent all through the day. I was in the House of Commons. When a Speaker of the House of Commons comes in wearing all his garments and a big staff, you have to stand. Everyone in the chamber has to stand. And they go, all rise. I was off. So I actually stayed sitting down. And this policeman came over to me and went, show some respect, son, and stand up. And I went, I've got Parkinson's. I can't stand up. And he went, oh, terribly sorry, he said. Thanks for letting me know. Anyway, about 5 minutes later, all the medication kicked in. And I ran past him and went, thanks, mate. And went in. I can see him looking at me going, you better. Anyway, so that's the nature of the beast. It's quite good fun, actually. Sometimes we might pretend. So I came to Christ when I was 18. I'm a first-generation Christian. I didn't grow up in a Christian home. As you can tell from my dulcet tones, I come from the East End of London, or Essex, from a place called Dagenham. We prefer to call it Dagenham because it sounds a little bit more sophisticated. My dad was an undercover cop. He was a plainclothes detective, an armed detective actually, in something called the Flying Squad and a regional crime squad, and then was a murder investigator for the Met Police. Mum was at home. I got a sister who's 3.5 years older than me. I was not raised with any sense of belief at all. This is all important for what's coming next. You'll understand what drives me and what drives Steve as we share our stories and why we created the things that we do. Vivid memories of my dad. Back in the 70s, when you arrested a group of armed robbers at gunpoint or clubbed them with pickaxe handles, as was the way back then, you could get away with all sorts of mayhem you wouldn't get away with now. My dad actually brought home a sack of guns once for me to play with that he got from a group of armed robbers, and he actually tipped them out on the floor of the kitchen. And I remember sitting there with half a sawn-off shotgun and my mum coming in going, Brian, get this filth out of our house. And then going, it's only guns, sweetheart, won't hurt him. So that was the kind of upbringing that I had. Faith did not feature. When I was 15 years old, I was having a bowl of cornflakes at the breakfast bar. My dad came down in his suit and he opened his briefcase, proper old school one, opened a briefcase and he pulled out pictures of a woman who'd been stabbed from head to toe. And they were autopsy photos, pre-autopsy photos. He said, this is my day today. I've got to go to the autopsy. This woman, she was a married woman, murdered by a lesbian lover because she didn't leave her husband. She got stabbed over 100 times from head to toe. And he went, son, the world is scum. People are violent. People are horrible. We're monkeys. We are born and then we go back to dust. We're just animals. Do what you got to do to get through life. Lie, cheat, steal if you need to. Do what you got to do to protect your family, then you're going to die. Cheers, son. Shut his briefcase, went to work. I'm like, I just wanted me Frosties. I just want a bowl of cornflakes. That was the upbringing that I had. But at age 12, something profound happened to me. That was the Gideon's guy came round with the little red Bibles. Do you have Gideon's here? Yeah, so he came round. He had a big shocking load of white hair. He had a power suit on. I was 12 years old. The way they did school assemblies back then, we had to sit on the floor. And he said, come up, shake my hand and promise me you'll read this book every single day. If you don't promise to read this book, you'll not go and steal the thing. If you don't promise to read this book, I will not give you a copy of this Bible. So promise me. And I went up and I shook his hand. He said, do you promise to read this Bible every single day? And I went, yes, sir, I promise, because we were too scared to say otherwise. He gave me a copy of the Bible. I went home. My dad had always told me that your word is your bond. If you promise something, do it. I opened the front of the Bible and it had in there where to read if you're sad, lonely, depressed. There's nowhere to read if you're really happy, which I think is an oversight by the Gideons. actually. But I did read it every single day for about 2 weeks. Then my mate Bigsy, who is still engaged in my life now, I'm bearing in mind I'm 52 now, so this is 40 years ago. My mate Bigsy came up to me and he said, "Have you noticed what the Bible's made of?" And I went, "No." And he went, "Fag papers, cigarette papers." So we actually smoked our first Bible. That was the absolute truth. I described to people that I took the Word of God in very deeply, just in the wrong way. And I smoked it from Revelation back to Hebrews chapter 12, which is relevant to later, because I didn't want my mum and dad to see that I was smoking it. So I smoked it from the back. Anyway, I found that Bible years later, which becomes relevant later. And at age 18... my mate Bigsy, who I was now sitting next to at A-level English, I'd applied to join the British Army. So I was doing A-levels, the sort of hires in our education system after, you know, the basic GCSE O-level ones. I don't know what your system is here, but like graduating from high school, I guess. I was doing that, and this guest speaker came in and did something I don't think you'll get away with now. But he said, he was talking about Macbeth, and then he stopped his talk and he said, "There's a group of people all over the world who are prepared to die for what they believe in. They're called born-again Christians. Are there any in this room?" And my mate Bigsy put his hand up. And I thought he was having a laugh, because the only born-again Christian I knew at that time was Cliff Richard. And I'm like, I said, "That's really funny, nice one." And Cliff had just released Mistletoe and Wine, which is a shocker of a song. Sorry if you're a Cliff Richard fan, it's terrible. And I thought, "Oh, that's really funny." And he went, "No, I am." He went, "What, you're born again?" He went, "Yeah, I'm a Christian." I said, "You not told me." He went, "Oh, I thought you'd react badly." I said, "How'd that happen?" He's outside the class. He went, "I've been going to this place called Emerson Park Chapel." And Emerson Park Chapel? And he said, "Yeah, yeah." And anyway, I took the mick out of him for about 6 months, normally in front of a group of girls. I used to do impressions of Jesus dying on the cross and the resurrection and all kinds of stuff. And then one day he came over to me, poked me in the chest. "Here's your first evangelistic tip." He said, "If you don't come to church with me, you're a chicken," in front of a group of girls. That's clever, isn't it? So I went, "Of course I come to church with you." No problem at all. I hid outside the front of my house on Sunday. He said, "I'll take you to YPF." I said, "What's YPF?" He said, "The Young Person's Focus Group." I said, "What do you focus on?" He said, "Jesus." I thought, this is terrible. On the Sunday night, a bloke called Doug pulled up in a brown Morris Marina. Terrible car. Terrible car. I got in the back. This bloke called Doug, he's 44. I'm 52. I thought he was nearly dead. I said, "What do you do?" He said, "I'm a youth worker." "Youth worker?" He said, "I'm actually a youth deacon." I said, "What's a deacon?" He said, "Not an elder." I said, "What's an elder?" He said, "Very important." Oh, what, they float or something? Anyway, so we're driving down the road. We stop at the traffic lights. And Doug turns around to Bigsy, my mate, and he says, "Alex," he said, "I am so grateful to God that he gave me this car." I said, "It's a Morris Marina." And if it had been a Porsche 911, I would have kumbaya'd all the way to the church. I thought, "You're mad." And then he looked at me and he said, "One day, son, you'll understand." I thought, ooh. Anyway, he got to the church. It was the Young Person's Focus Group. The main service was finishing. There were a group of girls on the back row. They were quite good looking. And I thought, that is a surprise. I did not think that Christian women were beautiful. But there was one woman there that particularly grabbed my attention. I asked her out. She said, "I only go out with Christians." I said, "Well, I am one. I'm British." Because that's what I thought. I thought we were all Christians because we were British. And she said, "No, one, somebody's met Jesus." I said, "Well, I have. Because I've been a king in the nativity play when I was about 5. So I thought I had." And she said, "No, like, actually, like, change your life." So the next week I faked a conversion to go out of her. She saw through it. She said, "I know you're not a Christian because you're still smoking." So I thought, well, that's weird. Anyway, after a long period of time, because I've got a lot of detail I could go into, but a man called Robert Scott preached the message of Jesus. He was an ex-paratrooper who'd become a Methodist minister. And bear in mind, I wanted to join the army. And he preached the life, death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And then he said, "There's someone in this room who needs to stand up now and give your life to me. And if you don't stand up, all the things I put into your life will be wasted. So stand up now." And I found myself, I thought, "You're mad." She was going, "This isn't Robert speaking, it's God speaking." I'm like, "You look like Robert. You nutter." And he kept saying it, and he kept saying it. I realised I was standing up when I was crying. And then the two elders of the church, because I was making a bit of a scene, so I was crying like a man cries, you know, noisy. I was so sobbing. I'm like, "Oh!" Like, couldn't, like, from deep sobbing. And these two elders of the church are both called Ron. One was tall, one was short. We had an act called the Two Ronnies in the UK, and he just... One was called Ron Aldridge and one was called Ron Blow. So proper posh blokes. And they came over to me and they went, we want to talk to you in the back room. And I thought, what are they going to shoot me? So I've grown up with a cop dad who was violent. I'm like, shit, what's happening? And they took me in the back room and they went, young man, what do you believe? And I'm like, I don't believe nothing, Ron. And they went, okay, well, we don't know what's happened to you. You don't know. So we'll talk to you the next week. I thought, I failed the entrance test. They haven't even got going. And then they went to walk out, and I'm like, Ron, come back in, Ron. And they came back in. They went, what is it, young man? I went, I don't know nothing, but I know Jesus died for me, and I don't know why I know it. And these blokes burst into tears, and they pulled me out of the chair, and they started hugging me and spinning around on the spot. I'm like, this is really bizarre. And then they led me out of the room, and they went, Carl was lost, but now he's found. I'm like, I'm in Hornchurch. I know who I am. I didn't understand the language. What do you mean I'm lost? I didn't understand it. But a girl I fancied came over and gave me a kiss. I thought I should have done this 6 months ago. This is amazing. Anyway, she became my wife. So that was amazing. It's a big ambush. I think it's a setup from the word go. That night, I stood out on the main road in Hornchurch, and I'm looking at a dying tree, shrub, bush on the other side of the road, and it looked green. Like, I cried and cried, and my mate Bigsy, who I still know, as I said to this day, he said, why are you crying, mate? And I went, the leaves are green, mate. He said, what do you mean they're green? I went, it's green. It was like I'd stepped out of a black and white picture into a full colour picture. And that night, I drove home and I'm looking at people. And I'm like, these are God's kids. And they don't know. They don't know who they are. I've got to tell them. I didn't know that was called an evangelist. I just knew that if this is true, that's everything. Everything. And it was my first stirring of knowing I had to give everything to Christ. Whether you're a banker, dentist, baker, fisherman, that was the drive of my life. That this was true. The gospel was true. It would take everything. I didn't speak to my parents that night. I'd been given a Bible by the girl that I fancied. She actually wrote in this Bible, I love you, Carl, and I always will. I've kept that Bible to this day. It's tatty now and falling apart, but I kept it, not for sentimental reasons. That is the best get out of jail free card a man could ever have. Whenever I upset, I go, you wrote that in the front of the Word of God. You can't back down on it. So I got up the next morning and I went down to my dad, armed robbery squad detective dad, and I went, Dad, I've met Jesus Christ last night and I've decided not to join the British Army but fight battles for him instead. My dad didn't even look up from the frying pan. Totally calmly just went, still fancy girls, don't you, son? That's the main thing. And totally nailed it. And I thought, oh no, my first attempt at evangelism. And I went upstairs, I sat on my bed, and I didn't know how to read the Bible. I just opened it, and it went on to the book of Hebrews, which I smoked back to. Chapter 13, verse 5, which said, I'll never leave you or forsake you. I had this overwhelming feeling that no matter what I did, I'd never be alone again. And that has driven me into everything that I've done so far and facing some of the challenges which I'll unpack over the last 5 years. And that led me into some gospel adventures which I'm going to unpack for about 15, 20 minutes. I have never seen anything as powerful as the gospel of Jesus Christ, not just to transform your thoughts and transform your life, but transform your destiny. There is nothing else like it. There is no self-help book, no hypnosis, no management course, no scheme, no system that will change your life and your destiny like the gospel of Jesus Christ. I've had privileges because of the work that I've thrown myself into. I've been able to meet people where my mind has been utterly blown. I've sat in a little room in Belfast, in a living room in Belfast, with a former IRA terrorist, bomber, and a member of an undercover team from the former Royal Ulster Constabulary, while they were eating tea cakes together and praying. And they said to me, we used to be hunting each other on the streets of Belfast. And I said, but, and then now they said, we pray together. I said, what brings you together? We were on the men's breakfast planning committee. How amazing is that? And if you think about it, All the political effort that went into Ireland, all the effort ongoing, and yet the gospel of Jesus Christ brought two enemies together in a little living room eating tea cake. I thought, you don't get to see this anywhere else. That's why for me, 1 Corinthians 2 verse 2 is so important. I determined to know nothing amongst you except Christ and him crucified. I didn't come to you, it says, with brilliance of speech or wisdom. I came to you in weakness and in fear, in much trembling. My speech, my preaching were not with persuasive words of wisdom, but with a demonstration of the Spirit's power, so your faith might not be based on human wisdom, but in God's power. I tell you, that means a lot to me at the moment. When I'm off, my speech slurs, I can stutter over my words, but I still see people come to Christ because the power of the gospel will transcend all of that. If you make yourself available, if you put yourself out there for Christ, everything changes. I can tell you about another time before I get onto the specifics of the gathering, because this all leads into it. One time I was asked to go to the Netherlands. I went there for 10 days, which is a long trip. I went all over the Netherlands teaching about men's ministry. And then when I got to Schiphol Airport, my wife at the time was my PA. She's not anymore. But I opened up my phone and an extra meeting had been booked in for the day I come back. So basically, I was flying back from the Netherlands, having been away for 10 days, going to Schiphol Airport, driving home for 45 minutes, and then going back out to a place called Barrow-on-Soar. You ever heard of Barrow-on-Soar in Loughborough? Exactly. Never would, would you? Why would you? I once said that to a Buddhist, and one person knew it, which is astonishing. And I phoned my wife, and I said, why am I away again? And she played the power card that Christians should never play. I prayed about it and I felt the Lord say you should go, which is better than I just don't want you to come home. So I went home, I had a shower and I did a quick turnaround and I really, really didn't want to go. I was a bit grumpy about it, to be honest. I was tired and I just wanted to go home, stroke my dog and look at my plants because I love my gardening. But I didn't. I said, what is it? She said, it's a curry night. I went, great. Curry is the new quiche in England, in Christendom. All we eat is curry at men's events. I'm actually sick of it. Anyway, so I got in the car. I drove for an hour down to Loughborough. And when I turned up, so I'm normally early for everything. It's just an OCD thing I got about efficiency. I turned up early and the organiser was there. I normally beat them. And it's the tiniest curry house. In Barrow-on-Soar, there's a curry house. There's a pub, a canal, and a few houses. That's it. And I said, there was about 20 tables in it. And I said, how many people you got coming? He went, oh, about 15, 20. I said, how long do you want me to talk for? He said, 10, 15 minutes. Oh, was it worth it? And then I said, what do you want me to do? He said, preach the gospel. I went, I can do that. I said, how many people you got coming who aren't Christians? He went, oh, they're all Christians. I thought, oh, no. And I went, what's on the menu? He said, a chicken booner and a naan bread. I said, what if you don't like chicken booner? He said, have a naan bread. I thought, this is a nightmare. Utter nightmare. So I'm in this little curry house, and my mate walks in called Gasky, Paul Gask, who used to work in Vice in the cops and then counter-terrorism. And with him, and I'm not exaggerating, I've got a photo of this guy on my phone because people think I'm making this stuff up. He looked like Herman Munster. Have you heard of him over here? He was like a cross between a Bond villain and Herman Munster. Big lump. And he sat opposite me and I went, hello, mate. And he just went, like that. I went, oh, okay. So I had a naan bread. He had a chicken booner. I had a Diet Coke. And then I got up to give my talk. Straight down the line, 10-minute talk. Jesus Christ, the Son of God. That's it. And he rose again, forgive his sins. He forgive anything. I sat down again, and 10 minutes, obedient, and to that, sat down. I said to this bloke, who said his name was Dorian, I said, what do you think of the talk, Dorian? And he went, like this. I went, right. I got up to get another Diet Coke before I'd leave. Tiny little place. So I'm like, my table's here, and the bar's here. So I go over, get a Diet Coke, and I turn around. I'm 5'8" and a half. The half's very important. He was about 6'3". So he's looking down at me. He's a big lump, skinhead, gnarly. And he went, your talk. I went, yeah, yeah. He went, your Jesus, can he forgive anybody? And I went, of course he can. He went, how does he do that? Now, bear in mind, I'm a bit fed up. So I went, didn't you listen to a word I said? That's why I'm an evangelist, not a pastor, see? I went, didn't you listen? And he went, well, I didn't understand what you were going on about. And I went, right. So he said, I said, of course he can forgive anybody. He went, can he forgive a Nazi who gassed Jews to death in a concentration camp then? Out loud in this little curry house. I mean, of course he can, Dorian. Of course he can. Jesus can forgive anyone. That's the power of his death. All the mess, all the pain, all the evil, everything taken in. Died, rose again, so we can go free. And his eyes filled up with tears, and he span out on his heels and just whizzed out of the curry house. Gasky, who's a very effervescent person, very, very enthusiastic guy, who looks like a pit bull who's eating a wasp. So it's ugly company that night. He comes bouncing over, and this is just like he is, isn't it? He goes, significant. He said, very significant, absolutely significant, very significant, significant conversation, significant. I mean, what's significant? He went, oh, he said, that conversation. I mean, why is it significant? He went, he's a neo-Nazi terrorist general who got arrested at gunpoint, planting a pipe bomb at a pride rally. I mean, well, you could have told me that before I got in his face, couldn't you? He went, oh, yeah, he said he was arrested for a plot to kill Tony Blair's son. I said, what's he doing in Barrow-on-Soar? He said, oh, it's a Secret Service safe house here. Well, it was until I started talking about it, and they're not in Barrow-on-Soar anymore, apparently. He said his real name's Chris. He said, it's amazing. He said, I only dragged him out. He said, my mate's giving a talk. He said, you probably won't like the talk, but there's a chicken booner and a naan bread. And Chris had said, oh, I love a chicken booner. So there you go. And it came out. This is the power of getting men together. Anyway, it turns out the next morning, Chris, not Dorian, so it's not his real name, Chris is stalking Barrow-on-Soar. And apart from the curry house, there's also a Baptist church in Barrow-on-Soar, a tiny Baptist church. And he saw that the door was open. The pastor was in his study doing Baptist minister pastoral things, or reading his UCB notes or something. And Dorian, Chris, walks in and he goes, I heard about Jesus last night. Is it true? Can you imagine the Baptist minister turning around, seeing that hairy lump behind him? And he said, thankfully, he was a proper minister. He knew the Lord. And he goes, yes, he said, it's true. It's all true. And leads him to Christ. And Chris gets on his knees, repents of his sin, gives his life to Jesus, and within 18 months, he preaches the message of Jesus, 18 months later, to 1,000 kids, Jewish school kids, on a Holocaust Memorial Day. How amazing is that? Don't you think that's amazing? It's incredible, isn't it? Out of a curry night. And not just that, the first person out of that he led to Christ was a black guy. He was known for sending rifle bullets to black media celebrities. The second person he led to Christ was a gay bloke, and he tried to plant a pipe bomb at a pride rally. The third person he led to Christ was his son. And I've got a picture of him praying for a black guy at the gathering, which I'm coming on to. Also, he sent me a picture 3 years ago of a rival terrorist group leader he participated in his baptism for, a terrorist group leader who tried to have him killed. He baptised him. You want to dismantle terrorism? It's the gospel of Jesus Christ. There's nothing else like it. So I'm looking at all this thinking, how do we multiply this? How do we get this going? How do we role model salvation? And this verse to me, these set of verses are amongst the most powerful, and I've tried to apply this, and I'm going to tell you what we do, and one of the things we've seen happen, and then I'm going to stop. Romans 12:9, I think, is the mandate for Christian living for us blokes. Let love be without hypocrisy. Detest what is evil. Cling to what is good. Love one another deeply as brothers and sisters. You know when people say, I love them, but I don't like them? Oh, it's cheap. Love till it hurts. Love till you do like them. Love them and love them and love people. And eventually it changes your heart. Me and Steve, we run a work amongst some of the most broken people the UK's got. Stinking, horrible people. Villainous types. Take advantage. Keep loving them and loving them and loving them. Eventually your heart changes. That's the ones that Jesus came for. Do not lack diligence in zeal. Be fervent in the spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in affliction. Persistent in prayer. Share with the saints in their needs. Pursue hospitality. Christian hospitality to me is not a nice party, dinner party with people like you. It's opening your home and your lives to people not like you and creating those opportunities. You're doing that today by hanging out with me, British bloke. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. More on this tomorrow, but I'll share some of my story. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Don't be proud. Instead, associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own estimation. Do not repay evil for evil. Be careful to do what is honourable in everyone's eyes. If possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Friends, do not avenge yourselves. Instead, leave room for God's wrath, because it is written, vengeance belongs to me, I will repay, says the Lord. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing so, you'll heap fiery coals on his head. Do not be conquered by evil, but conquer evil with good. About 13, 14 years ago, we were running events, static events in conference centres, golf weekends, that kind of thing. I was getting bored. Our final event was a ferry to Dublin. We actually called it a cruise, but it was a ferry. And our captain actually came to us and said, you've eaten more food over this 2 days than people eating a cruise for 2 weeks. That's Christian men's ministry. We took 300 blokes. It nearly bankrupted us. It wasn't my idea. It was my predecessor's idea. It nearly bankrupted us. But we filled it up by saying there's a free place or half-price place, every non-Christian who goes. And, you know, we had a whole bunch of guys come to Christ, which is good. But it nearly ruined us and bankrupted us. And I'm sitting at a table and I'm thinking, I can't carry on like this. I want to fill an event up with people who are not Christians. I want to fill an event up with blokes who don't know Christ. I think the sharpest way to do discipleship is to get interested about the lost. That sharpens your prayer life, your Bible life. You know, the key to not looking at porn anymore, gentlemen, is not to think, I must not look at porn. It's like me saying to you, don't think about pink elephants. That's what you think about. The sharpest way to clean your life up and get holy is to get interested in salvation and your mates are going to hell and be passionate about that. It sharpens up everything. And I knew that all these things joined up. I'm like, what do we do? What do we do? And I'm sitting around this table with my mates. It's before Steve started working with me, actually. I said, I can't go on like this. They said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to fill up a festival with men who don't know Jesus. They said, how are you going to do that? I said, I want rock bands, comedians, car shows, air displays, parachute people in, blow stuff up, shoot people, whatever it takes. And then we'll preach Christ. And we'll worship our hearts out and see loads of them come to Christ. They said, what do you need to do that? I said, I need a field. I need a big field. And I kid you not, this is the way the Lord works. As I'm sitting there saying this, this posh bloke, posh Englishman, comes walking over to me. And he's carrying a cardboard tube. I knew he was posh because he had his jumper tied around his shoulders. I thought, you're definitely a posh bloke. And he had wealthy hair. You know, some people have wealth hair. He had like wealth hair and a cardi around his shoulders. And I come from working class roots, and we have a big class system in England. When people talk to me, they're very posh. I can't help but mimic them because I get all intimidated. And he came over and he said, hello, are you Carl Beach? I went, yes, I am. he said, can I show you what's in my tube? And I went, oh, yes, of course again. Take a seat. So he sat down, he said, I've just bought some polo fields. I went, oh, how marvellous. And he said, let me show you my fields in this map. I went, oh God. So he unrolled these maps. He went, I bought several polo fields. I said, oh, bravo. And he said, and everyone's looking at me going, what's happened to him? What's happening? What's happened to Beachy? And he said, but my son, he said, he had a vision. Okay, he opened the gates. And he had a vision. Thousands of men coming to Christ on this field. Would you like to use the polo fields? And I went, yes, I would. And everyone's looking at me going, how does that even happen? Anyway, we call it a field near Swindon. And we thought, I'd never run a festival before. But I've got two life mottos, gentlemen. One is, nothing ever happens to a bloke who didn't have a go. The second one is, let's see if we can get away with it. So I said, let's put on a festival. They went, you don't know how to do that. And I went, who cares? What's the worst that can happen? Quite a lot, actually, it turns out. We didn't have enough toilets. We had the world's grumpiest barman from Swindon who hated humanity. I roped together two corporate tents which didn't work properly. We had a terrible scale electric set, a terrible comedian, but I hosted it really badly because I wasn't used to it, but I preached the gospel. 27 men, about 250 men came, about 10% of the camp came to Christ that weekend. So he said, let's do it again. So I said, let's do it again. Then the next year, about 400 people turned up, 380 people turned up. And it was kind of more the same. We thought, well, let's put on a free fun fair. So we got inflatables in and I got my hosting got a bit better, a bit more comedic and all that kind of stuff. And then the famous worship leader, Graham Kendrick, got involved with us. Graham Kendrick actually looks a lot like Steve Martin. And we started running the Graham Kendrick lookalike competition, which he's never won. In fact, one year, the black guy won it, didn't he? And Graham came third. Yeah. So we use a lot of humour, which the blokes love. They love it. I don't think Graham loves it, but we love it. He puts up with it. And then, like, things started to happen, like RAF people started coming, and they were saying, would you like the Battle of Britain Memorial flight to come and fly over during communion? So we'd have communion in the field. And we'd break bread, perfectly timed. As we finished breaking bread and everyone was having a good time, a Spitfire would barrel roll over the field. I remember the first year, this bloke had just come to Christ, took communion for the first time. The Spitfire came over and he looked at me, all tears in his eyes, not about the Lord. He went, was that a Spitfire for us? And I went, yeah, it was. He went, and it started escalating. Formula One team started sponsoring us and it grew and it grew and it grew. Like, it was extraordinary. Even, like, we had to stop it for the pandemic, but I tell you why it grew. We didn't know how to run a festival. The Lord loves a man who has a go. And he loves it when you live on the edge. And when you put your feet in the water, not for the sake of it, but for the gospel. If it's all about the gospel, he'll bless you. And we filled that place up with non-Christian men from all walks and backgrounds. And we so far have had about 1,000 men make first-time commitments to Christ from that festival. Isn't that amazing? In little old UK, 1,000 men make first-time commitments. We've had it where they brought their sons the next year or their grandfathers. We've seen generational salvation come through that field. And we're still running it to this day. Let me tell you a little story before I finish. One year, we're not big on green rooms. Speakers don't hide away. We all in it together, blokes in the field together. And one year we have a big mess tent that can seat about 500 and an auditorium that can seat whatever, a big top, we see everyone else and car displays and stuff. And I'm walking around and this bloke comes over to me and I have a little chat with him. And he said, he goes, my name's Matt. No, Matt, a young man. He said, I've got a bit of a life problem. I said, what's that? He said, I've got 20 kilos of cocaine in my car. He said, my mate invited me here. And he said, but I've seen a lot of police because we've got the Christian Police Association there. And he went, I need to square away the cocaine, but I'm going to get killed if I don't sell it. He said, I think I'm getting this whole Jesus thing. I said, well, look, thanks for the confession. Go and deal with the cocaine and let's talk again. So first night. Then he sort of comes over to the next one. I bump into him again, which is extraordinary. There are a couple of thousand guys on site. And he went, I've dealt with it and I'm not dead. I'm still here. And he said, and I've given my life to Jesus. Well, that's amazing. He said, I feel this extraordinary peace. I went, great. And I bump into him again. He said, I had a terrible night last night. He said, I couldn't sleep. I said, why is that? He said, I hated the police. I called them filth and pigs. And I've seen these police walking about, and he said, and I'm getting this overwhelming urge to hug a policeman. I said, I think I might be able to help you. He said, could you? I went, yeah, I'll sort it out tonight. Saturday nights, I big gospel preach when I preach the gospel and ask blokes to come to the front and surrender to Jesus. And I hadn't really thought it through. I got him up on the stage. I said, this is Matt, everyone. He was in the pharmaceutical industry. And he had to square some stuff away. And he said he hated the police. But he'd love to hug a policeman. Are there any policemen in here who'd like to give Matt a hug? And suddenly, bearing in mind, there's 2,500 that year sitting there. suddenly, out the back, I see all these cops running at this bloke. And I thought, oh, no. And he's looking at me going, oh, no. Like, what have you done? And I'm listening. My team are looking at me going, what have you done? And the most extraordinary thing happened. About 20 to 30 easy of these cops, they got hold of him and they hugged him. And I watched one of them, he cupped his face and said, I love you, son. Stroked his face. And I watched Matt burst into tears. Then I watched these cops start crying. And it wouldn't stop. It went on and on and on and on. It was this holy moment of incredible reconciliation. People loving their enemies. And then this cop wrote to me a month later and he said, I was stabbed up really badly by a drug dealer and I got chronic PTSD and I've not been able to sleep until I hugged that young man. And I felt the love of Jesus flow between us and I've slept like a baby ever since. Healed up. That is the power. That is the power of the gospel. We use a lot of humour. We unashamedly mess about. But I've never, ever seen anything as powerful as some of the things that we have seen there. It's a niche event. We're not in it for numbers. In fact, we cap numbers these days because we don't want it to grow too big. But at the start of this weekend, you heard Steve's story, you heard mine. I'm going to say to you, fellas, there is nothing like the gospel of Jesus Christ to transform your life and your mates' lives. There's nothing like it. I've determined something in my life that I would never be ashamed of Jesus in whatever sphere I find myself. Most recently, leading this Parkinson's charity, I've been invited to speak to two ministers of state, one-to-one, very unique situation. And both times they've said to me, why are you so happy and so optimistic? And both times I've been able to say to them, it's my faith in Jesus Christ that has made all the difference. And I'll say this here. When I said this to one of the ministers of state recently, do you know what they did? In their big office, in the Houses of Parliament, they started weeping. As the power of the Holy Spirit came into that meeting. You get on the front foot of God's purposes, everything changes. Your family, your kids, your workplaces, when we truly stand as ambassadors for Christ. Let's stand together. We're going to hear a lot of great teaching from Dave, and we'll share some stories over this weekend. But I think it's a moment of invitation. Michael will lead us. Just in this moment to say, here I am. Here I am. If you feel like the Lord is saying to you, son, don't hold back anymore. Son, it's time to really step up. Don't sit on the fence anymore. You felt like you've been apologising for Jesus and not being bold, or you realise that at this time now, in this season of life, it's time to really go for it. As we sing, this may not be for you, but as we sing, there may be you'd want to find a little space at the front or the side and just kneel before the Lord. If you're able to. Say, here I am. I think do that. Because you put skin in the game when you move out your seat and you're intentional. Here I am. Just kneel before the Lord and say, here I am. Would you move in my life? I was going to show you a promo of the gathering. We'll probably show that tomorrow now. Or maybe after. But in this moment, I think it's a holy moment. So as we sing Amazing Grace, if you want to say, here I am, Lord, meet with me, empower me, just come and kneel, spend a little sacred time before the Lord.